I'm Jeff, your leader for this meeting.
And I'm Juan.
Hey, please join us in a moment of silence, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. Thy will, not mine, be done. Welcome to this meeting of Sexaholics Anonymous. This is a closed meeting. Only conference attendees registered as sexaholics may attend this meeting. SA is an anonymous program. Many of us carry mobile devices capable of audio and visual recording. To maximize our commitment to anonymity, we cannot allow the use of these devices for recording of anything inside the conference. Please remember that this is a recorded meeting. Anything said here will be shared with other SA members in the fellowship, and in doing so may end up shared on the internet as a whole. Anyone speaking can choose to use a pseudonym or to share with someone after the meeting if they do not want to be recorded. This is a topic meeting. The topic for this meeting is, I'll get it right here. Growing out of unhealthy dependency. Thank you. We've asked a volunteer to share the opening reading for this topic.
John Sexaholic. Growing out of unhealthy dependency, recovery continues, page 61 and 62. And that section is titled Lust, Sex, and the Marriage Misconnection. As the periods of abstinence gradually became freer, with no need or expectation of sex at all, it dawned on me one day that I had been sexually dependent all this time in sobriety. Lust or no lust, sexually sober, yet still addicted to sex. For others, I don't know what this means, but for me, the sexaholic, I could use sex and marriage to cover not only the relational pathology, but my own personal defects as well. So there were now two dependencies that had come to the light of day that I was getting progressive victory over, lust and just plain sex itself. What a new freedom this brought, an independence and strength in merely being able to live on my own without either dependency. Freedom I could never even have dreamed of, but this time I knew better than to think that I had arrived, because along with this new freedom from sexual dependency came a new awareness. I had the sneaking hunch that there was a deeper pathology underneath even this. All along, lust had been covering the sexual dependency, which had in turn been covering another unhealthy dependency. But what was this bottom layer? How could there be more addictive pathology when lust and sex were both out of the picture? Real easy. My wife was a woman, wasn't she? And woman for me meant mother, sex gratifier, servant, confidant, decision maker, life support system. So I had to commence the long, arduous journey of another emancipation, one that would make the first two from lust and sex look easy. For this one meant growing up. It turns out that we had been taking the place of God in each other's lives and didn't even know it until we both began emancipating ourselves from each other and letting God have first place. We were each doing this in our own ways and hadn't realized it. First, slowly, I had begun to find in the one who was keeping me sober that I had previously been looking for in lust. I had begun to find in the one who was keeping me sober what I had previously been looking for in lust, sex, and dependency. Then she, freed from my lust, then my sexual, then my emotional and spiritual dependency, was being led on her own journey to faith. As I look back on this precious experience of the last couple of years, out of the 11 of my current sobriety, I see it must have started about the time I began hearing her humming and singing hymns to herself. God, joy, and gladness were taking the place that awful stress and gloom of mere coexistence. Now, coming in through the back door, here are the very things I had let go of, ever expecting. My wife's respect, a priceless gift, her total support, her affection. More than I ever gave up wanting is mine now. No, it's not mine at all, it's ours, and that's infinitely better. Now I've begun trying to bring her into my program, talking with her as I would in a meeting, leading with my weakness. Though I've been doing it in meetings, I hadn't come out of that isolation with her. And most recently, before going off to work, we've begun saying our own version of the third step prayer together. And here's a thought. Now that the sexual dependency is gone, I can have what sex was probably meant to be. The simple, the natural, and the good. But now that I don't need it and don't expect it, I don't have to have it at all. Sexual dependency had been taking the place of something better. Only we didn't know what that was because we'd never been there. When I shared this at a meeting recently, an SA member who is single said, I had problems with SA's idea of no sex before marriage for the recovering sexaholic, but just went along with it. Now, for the first time, I can see why we say that. Now it makes sense. AA, page 88. The minute we put our work on a service plane, the alcoholic commences to rely upon our assistance rather than upon God. He clamors for this or that, claiming he cannot master alcohol until his material needs are cared for. Nonsense. Some of us have taken very hard knocks to learn this truth. Job or no job, wife or no wife, we simply do not stop drinking so long as we place dependence upon other people ahead of dependence upon God. Burn the idea into the consciousness of every man that he can get well, regardless of anyone. The only condition is that he trusts in God and clean house.
Thanks, John. Thanks, John. For the next few minutes, I'll share my experience, strength, and hope as it relates to the topic, after which my co-leader will also share. When we have finished sharing, the meeting will be open for others to share. Did we get a timer? Somebody want to volunteer to be a timer for the meeting?
3 minutes.
Yeah, thanks, James. Thanks. When we have finished sharing, the meeting will be open for others to share. May I ask that the timer please time me and my co-leader 3 minutes each? The meeting is now open. Okay, so I guess we'll say this after we do ours. Maybe I'll just read it now. The meeting is now open for sharing, so as many as possible can share. Please keep your shares to the time limit of 3 minutes. We ask that sharing be pertinent to the topic. We don't take the inventories of others. That is, we uncover and work on our own defects, not those of others. We avoid politics, religious dogma, or other divisive issues. We avoid explicit sexual descriptions and sexually disrespectful, abusive language. If someone feels a share is too explicit, they may signify by raising their hand. We do lead with our weakness and take the risk of total self-disclosure. Please raise your hand and introduce yourself by your first name before sharing. All right. So I'll start off. Hey, I'm Jeff, sexaholic.
Jeff.
And maybe I'll just come stand over here, because I think this is what we'll do. Hey, I saw this meeting today, and I thought, well, I'll tell you the truth. This topic scares me. It scares me a lot. I remember, you know, in meetings and stuff, having times when we read literature in a lot of the meetings we're in, and I'd hear these stories about these couples that would go through these periods of abstinence from sex, these marriages, and they'd go for long periods of time. And I'll tell you, my fear isn't just for what it means to me. I'm also fearful of how my wife would react to that kind of conversation. And I went for years just thinking I could never even bring this up in a conversation with my wife, even thinking that, well, you know, I really hear it a lot. There must be something to it, but I'd be afraid to bring it up. And I remember some years ago, we were talking, and for some reason, the topic just seemed to come up. And I talked about, you know, dependency and potential time of abstinence. And she got quite angry with me. And then it didn't take long. I guess one gift in our marriage is that we don't stay angry at each other for long periods of time. And maybe 5 minutes of that, and we started to chill out and talk. And over time, we have talked about these things. But, you know, the idea that not just freedom from lust and sex dependency in marriage, but that there's even other dependencies in marriage that need to be addressed, that came up in the reading, is another idea that scares me a lot, because I do see in the way that I treat my wife and the way we interact a great deal of dependency in that relationship. My wife went away on a trip recently with some friends. She went on a backpacking trip, and I'll tell you, I travel for work, and I'm not home all the time. But it was a week that I was home, and she was gone, and I felt kind of abandoned and lonely at home, and not having her. And I built up quite a resentment against her during that time, and it just drove home to me the level of dependency that I had developed, and also it drove home the powerlessness I have over that dependency. And I guess that's just an area where we'll need to grow together, and I'll need my higher power to allow me to grow in the ability to surrender that. So thanks for letting me share.
I'm going to stay seated. I'm a little lazy today. Juan, sexaholic.
Juan.
Start the timers. Yeah, my experience with this is a little different. When I first got into the program, for some reason I had a sense, and it wasn't anybody that specifically told me this thing, but I just had a sense from different speaker meetings and different readings that we did, and the sense was, Juan, you're going to have to give up your marriage. And it just, I don't know why, I thought, why is that? How is that God's will? I thought he wanted us to stay together, you know? I thought that's what the plan was, the plan. And fast forward 4 years after starting the program and getting that thought, and my answer to that, because it kept coming, it was bugging me over and over and over, you're going to have to give up your marriage, you're going to have to give up your marriage, and I just couldn't reconcile that. Eventually, I heard someone say, like, sobriety, recovery, connection with your higher power is the thing that you need. And that's how I reconciled it in my head. Okay, well, God, if that's what's going to give me more of you, then I'll take it. I'll take it. And fast forward 4 years, my wife decides to leave, even though I was sober, maybe not working the program as quickly as I could have. And I just, it destroyed my life, basically. But I took that, and that thought just kept coming back. Is this worth it? Am I worth it? My higher power is asking me, am I worth it? Knowing me, is it worth it? And I'm like, yeah. I know it in here that it's worth it, but here in my heart, no, I don't think so. And it was a very rough, maybe first 6 months of separating. And during those 6 months, I just had nights where I could not sleep. I couldn't do it because I was so concerned with what she was up to. And, you know, I was trying to win her back, and none of that was working, and it just mess with me so much. I just had a hard time letting go. And one night I was up late, and I just thought, like, how am I going to stay sober? You know, so people get to sleep next to their wives and maybe, you know, have sex or something. I'm like, I'm done. I have nothing, no sex with self, no sex with anyone other than the spouse. I got nothing, no outlet. And there were some scary times, and it had to be God. It had to be him helping me. And all I did was surrender to him. And there was one night where it was just miserable. And I was just thinking, hey, God, what am I supposed to do here? I feel miserable. And the thought came to me. This was after like 2 hours of trying to get to sleep, and I just couldn't. And the thought came to me, you're addicted to your wife. And thank you. As soon as I realized that, I instantly went to sleep. I was like, oh, maybe I am. And I accepted it. I was like, I just want to go to sleep. So this has been a long process of trying to let her go. Again, my story is a little bit different, but you can stay sober without sex. I am living proof, 2 years running strong. So thanks for letting me share.
Yeah, I mean, the meeting is open now.
Bryce, sexaholic.
Bryce. This is a topic near and dear to my heart because this is a huge problem I have, and I'll tell you a recent story. So last night I got back to my room, to me pretty late, like 10 o'clock. I was exhausted, and I'm sure I have a roommate. I look around the room, and none of his stuff's in the room, and I felt abandoned and betrayed. I'm like, boy, he ditched me. I got ditched. I was hurting. And I knew better. I'm like, Bryce, he's working registration. He's probably doing a teardown. He's just going to be late, and that's it. But boy, reality does not match my insane, hurt, self-hurting, self-traumatizing fantasies. And I'm like, no, I guess I'm just going to be in this room alone for the Unity Conference. And of course, 30 minutes later, he shows up. And so, you know, that's how insane I am. And to me, that's the unhealthy dependency, is that I don't feel good unless there's other people to help me feel good. And it's not their job. It's not their job. And it's weird, right? Because in part, the purpose of me coming to these meetings and doing fellowship is so that I can support others. Others can support me. We can do fellowship. We can love each other. So there is a need, right? And like, I have a responsibility to reach out to people when I need help. And so there is a healthy dependency that the program's trying to teach. But boy, oh boy, like I'm trying to work angles. And, you know, if there's someone out there that I find is very powerful, very strong, I want to hitch my cart to that person. Like that one man or that woman, they're going to take me places. And I was talking to a lady at the international convention, and she's like, Bryce, that's just lust. And I'm like, it is. I agree. And so that's a big piece why I've been found myself very attracted to powerful women, because boy, like they're everything then, right? Not only will, you know, they take me places, right? But like I can get them to do all the things I don't want to do, and then they can dominate me and make me do the things that I'm not normally willing to do. And I'm like, I need that. I need that. And that's my lust speaking. And if I surrender all of that, and it's like, guess what? Like if I go to God instead, God will help me do the things that I really don't feel like doing. And God will show me the right way to do things in life. And I don't need that person out there to either dominate or be dominated by. Thanks for letting me share, Bryce Sexaholic.
Thanks, Bryce.
All right, James Sexaholic.
James.
I remember walking into my first meeting and getting the newcomer speech, and the dependency relationship bit, like, stuck. Like, it really stuck out to me. And then that's what it, you know, kind of got me thinking and reflecting on, you know, my own dissolving marriage at the time. And, you know, in hearing a lot of the shares today and this morning and the reading of the topic, like got me thinking, like, yeah, I had been really dependent on, you know, at least my wife's, ex-wife's happiness. And I had made her my higher power. I couldn't be happy unless she was happy. I couldn't be comfortable unless she was comfortable. You know, I had to make sure I had to have that control. And, you know, in hearing a lot of these, shares and in the reading, it made me realize how, you know, backwards my thinking was. I was trying to take control and manipulate her emotions, which I had absolutely no control over at all. And I would never have control over. I could certainly do things that not piss her off and make things worse. But apart from that, I could not be the one to make her happy. One of the biggest struggles that we both had was she has really bad insomnia. And a lot of our fights in the middle of the night were due to me snoring, neither of which, you know, either of us could control. And, you know, my solution was to go, you know, throw a little hissy fit and grab my pillow and go, fine, I'm going to just sleep on the couch. And then I did that for 12 years. That was not a good solution. I was, you know, taking things into my hands. That was the best idea that my sick brain could think of. And there was another, you know, conversation we had yesterday. She was blowing up my phone. During the joint panel last night, I was getting and feeling a little resentful towards her for bringing up a lot of stuff when I was trying to receive these really powerful messages from both S-Anon and SA folks. And it made me realize, like, I couldn't peel away and just tell her, can we talk about this later? I was still responding to these text messages. I felt like I had to be present for her, even though we're not married, even though I was trying to get messages. I was pulling myself away and giving her attention. I was still making her my higher power. So this is something I gotta really be aware of and work on. So thanks for letting me share.
Hi, I'm Michael, sexaholic.
Michael.
I really identify a lot with the previous shares. I didn't really realize it until it was said, but I also tend to look for the strongest person in a room or a group or someplace and attach myself to them. It kind of makes sense. My dad's a sexaholic, and I grew up learning to be dependent on him, and my dad happened to be alpha supreme. He was the alpha among alphas, and so I just went for that because that was the closest thing that I knew. When we were in a group project, whoever seemed like they knew what they were doing, I'm here. I'm your yes man. I'm gonna do whatever you want me to do. Come on, just take control. And as a previous share said, part of it is, I wrote this down so I won't forget it, but I'll say it too. Domination is getting someone who will do the things I don't want to do and will make me do the things I'm not willing to do. It's also me wanting to attach to someone strong to be protected and cared for because I feel scared that I will never be safe, never have my needs met, and never be able to make it on my own. And this is a lie. Some stuff went down with my dad being a sexaholic, doing sexaholic things, and I moved out because I didn't want to be a part of it. And I found myself having to take care of myself for the first time in my life, and you know what? I'm still scared. I've been doing this for almost a year, and I'm still terrified that everything's going to fall apart. I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop because I don't think that I can make it. I keep thinking that I'm going to mess it up in some way, and it's all going to go to pieces, which means I have a pretty low view of God, since he seems to have dragged me through this, and still alive so far, so... Yeah. Thank you for letting me share.
Hi, everybody. My name's Bradley. I'm a gratefully recovering sexaholic. Emotional dependency started very young because my dad was a sexaholic as well. And emotionally unavailable. My mom was the typical Jewish mother, so very emotional and very involved in everything. And I lean toward that, wanting emotional, needing emotional connection, but, wasn't able to find it. And, at an early age, got into being a sex addict because that's what was available to me. That's what was presented to me, if I want to be happy in my life, I need a woman to satisfy, and that became my purpose, my goal. And, when I had my first encounter with a girl, sexual encounter and such, I expected that, because apparently it went so well, the next morning we would be, boyfriend, girlfriend, everything would be great. I have this relationship and there'll be intimacy, whatever that meant. But that didn't happen. And there was a twist in my brain that was like, I guess you just go for the pleasure. the emotional intimacy just doesn't seem to be available. And in both my marriages, that was a difficulty. That was a struggle because sex was the focus. And, you know, and I relied on my wives, you know, and wanting to make them happy and everything. But, you know, because of my addiction and disease, I didn't know how to do, you know, that. And there was a lot of disconnection and a lot of dependency and codependency. And, it was really hard. Even after I got separated and divorced, you know, and issues with my children, my ex-wife putting kids in the middle, I always had that, you know, need. If she got involved in, you know, a complaint about something or what's going on, I had to respond to everything immediately. You know, if she accused me of something, I had to defend myself and all of that. And thankfully, a good friend who's also in the program was like, why are you doing that? You know, you don't need to respond to this, you know. And I had to learn to take a step back, you know, and like, okay, I'll take a day. Let me think it over. Let me talk to people. Let me whatever. And then if I feel like I need to respond, I'll respond, you know. But it was amazing that still that emotional dependency, that need to protect myself was still there. But thankfully for this program, I don't need that anymore. God's got me covered. So thanks for letting me share.
Hi, my name's Tim. I'm a sexaholic. You know, it's not a topic I think about every day, even though my biggest unhealthy dependency is on myself. So I guess I think about myself every day. I don't know. But my, and that is my struggle. I manipulate. I don't want to trust God or my higher power. Because I need to do it myself so I don't get hurt, so I don't get injured, so I don't get taken advantage of. And so it's really hard to surrender and just have relationship and just trust somebody. You know, these rooms have taught me, you know, since like 2003 I've been coming, you know, that I can trust people, that I can, you know... open up, that I can tell the truth. But yet I still struggle telling the truth. Because once I lie, I can't let people know that I lied. And so, you know, that's why I have a like 100% getting caught rate. You know, that eventually it's going to come out. But boy, you know, it's that hard thing. Can I really trust you not to walk away, not to hate me, not to reject me? And so, you know. Still learning, still got a ways to go. Probably another 20 years before I die, and maybe then I'll get it. So thanks for letting me share.
Good morning, Mike, sexaholic.
Hey, Mike. Hi.
47 days sober. Thank you. I'm a newbie here. Dependency, wow. There's a lot of dependency and codependency between me and my wife. Long history. I'm grateful that with what happened within our life in the last 13 months, that my wife and children are still here with me. And my dependency, I've realized after being with this fellowship, with SA, that I need to work on myself with all my defects. And August 15th was when I started. I got a couple of my brothers here. They've seen it. And I journaled. September 16th was when my wife asked me, who are you? and there was a dynamic shift there where I had to focus on my deficiencies, work on myself, and that bled into her having a different outlook with me and really liking it. And that bled into my daughter's resentment, my 14-year-old, with how, you know, a certain incident where I threw her in the closet, trying to teach her a lesson that caused trauma. And all these years, she remembered it. And I'm glad I can talk about it now without crying, because I was crying yesterday. You know, we pray sometimes together as a family and at night, and she just let it out. And that was because she's seen her dad being able to open up, and she's seen her dad cry more than he's ever cried in his life. And just sharing. And, you know, and I took the lead, and our dependency really now is on our God, our higher power, which is really healthy. That is helping out in all aspects of our life. And I realize certain dependencies I had on my wife before, and now it's getting better, and this and that. But the fellowship here has really helped me a lot, and it's bleeding into the whole family dynamic. And I hope, in time, I could just keep this family together and, stop the generational curses, some would say, and, break that downward cycle and do better, move forward. So thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks, guys.
Morning, everybody. My name is Bob. I'm a sexaholic. I really appreciate the honesty to set the tone for this meeting. It allows me to stand up here right now. One of the things that I became addicted to was the high of lust and the low lows. So when the idea came to me that, hey, Bob, this isn't in a normal, natural marriage with your wife that no longer has lust in it, this will be satisfying. No, it wasn't. I was addicted to the high highs and the low lows that came with lust, the screen of self-indulgent fantasy. And at some point in my life, an idea was expressed to me, sex fixes a lot of things. That was by a family member. Now, you have to be very careful when you talk to me, because I'm like, I pick everything up and I don't just pick it up. I write it in concrete, and I stick to that idea. And I talked about this the other night, that I have a lot of old ideas that are wrong. And so when I come here, and yes, I'm horribly addicted to the dependency of my relationship. I am horribly addicted to having my wife be okay, so I am okay. This morning when I was leaving the room to come down, she wasn't quite ready yet, and we got on a brief conversation about the difference that I heard when I listened to the speakers last night, coming from the point of an Essanon and an SA. She looked at me and she said, Bob, she said, you know, SAs are very good at compartmentalizing. You have a problem, we're just going to put it over here, let's go. But she said to me, when the smallest thing is wrong, everything is wrong. Now, that is baffling to me. I'm worried about my wife's mental state, right? Because I'm thinking, oh, we're not spring chickens anymore, and you know, it's age is catching up. It's not that. There's one thing wrong that makes everything wrong, and it takes so much brain power to run that idea and defend yourself and figure out how am I going to get out of this mess, if that's your thinking. And it just very well be the way my wife thinks, and if it is, she's not wrong. It's just the way my wife is. And tremendous trouble with that. Hey, straighten up, fly right. How many times have I heard that? No, that doesn't work in this relationship. Sex is a natural, normal place in our life. That ain't easy either. I am addicted to the high highs and the low lows, and it doesn't go away very easily. But this piece about dependency as being maybe something that's at the cornerstone of all this or more. I really understand that because even though Les doesn't seem to be in the picture. Thank you. I still want that. I want what I want when I want it, and I want you to be happy about it, is what I really want. There's a last hook there. I want you to be happy that I'm happy. It's hard to find. That's probably, there's a good reason why. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Greg. I'm a sexaholic. Fill me up and make me whole, he cried with outstretched arms. That is the essence of my whole addiction for me. I want to have this person fill me up. Even my lust, it's I want more to be lusted after. I want you to tell me that I'm okay by lusting after me, because that means I'm okay, because I'm wanted by you. I want to be wanted. Even when I was looking at porn, it was the look of the person in the porn that was saying that they wanted me more than anything else. That more than the body or the position or any of that other crazy shit that I looked at, that was the most important thing, that filling me up. And that's the essence of my dependency, is I want you to fill me up and to tell me that I'm okay. But I'm crazy. And so even in marriage, I chose somebody who couldn't do that. And in fact, I probably selected for it because I don't believe I'm okay. I don't believe essentially that I'm worthwhile or lovable. I don't have it inside of me. So therefore, I choose somebody who will confirm that horrible belief and who will then treat me that way. And in fact, has. And I don't know what's left. I don't know what my future holds. And it's terrifying, but I still want it. Because there's this insane belief that if the person who doesn't think I'm valuable can treat me as valuable, then I must really be valuable. But that's crazy. I mean, that's essentially crazy. I went back to my college reunion, my high school reunion a little while ago, a few years ago. There was a woman in high school who had a crush on me, but she was too normal. I saw her there and like, wow, she had a normal life and she's kind of a normie. Of course I wouldn't like her. Of course I would never respond to that. It all made sense. Because that's the way I am. If you are normal and can treat me normal and can be kind and loving, well, no, of course you'll like me. But I want somebody who can't. That's why I have to let go of these dependencies. And I'm still learning that kind of thing. I'm having to unravel all of this insanity inside. Only God can do it. But I have to surrender this. I have to surrender what I hope I can get from someone else. And letting go of what I can get and trying to just be okay with what I have is the hardest part for me. Thanks for letting me share.
Hey guys, I'm Sam, sexaholic. I almost didn't come here, but because I was realizing like what context of dependency are you talking about? But I really needed to be here, and this was amazing. Because I've realized, for those who don't know, I'm a middle school band teacher, and in public K-12 band world, like there's always a community, and I've realized just how dependent I am on like the whole band community, SCSBOA community, you know. I want people to think highly of me, and if I don't, like, I'm insecure about myself. And then with the dynamics of like kids switching out of my class for another class, like I feel abandoned. Like, did I do something wrong? And when I feel that way, I have to play the comedian. If I feel that way, I have to convince them that I'm such a great teacher that you shouldn't leave my class. You know, our program is teaching me to just be of service. You know, that's all I need to go do and let go. Be of service and let go. Find God, clean house. And that way I don't have to, like, try so hard to, like, play the comedian or play the whiplash guy or play, like, try to be this inspirational teacher. I can just be who I am. No, not just who I am, but who God has made me be. And that's just something I have to surrender every single day. The shares have been amazing. Thank you so much for the shares. I've realized that, you know, all I have to do is trust God, clean house, and kind of let go of all these, like, dependencies on other people, because it's just been burdensome. Like, I've lived in my own head so much because, like, I just think, like, oh my gosh, what if these kids leave? Like, if these kids leave, like, we're not going to sound as good. Like, oh, am I being, like, funny enough? Or, like, oh my gosh, do my band sound good enough? Am I being too hard on them and they're going to hate me? Like, and am I measuring up to other teachers? Like, I bet other teachers don't go through this. I bet it's just me. You know, it's just all these crazy, crazy thinking. And I'm learning to let go of it. And I think that's just something I gotta do every single day. And it seems to me the essence of the program is just be who God has me be, you know? In my addiction, I want to be the clairvoyant and predict the future. In my addiction, I want to sleep with another man's wife, someone that's not my wife, you know? That's what I want to do in my addiction. God doesn't have me be that. God just has me be of service. And thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, Sam.
John Sexaholic.
Hey, John.
So I have a lot of thoughts about this. I've actually learned a lot from my wife talking to her about the Essanon program and some of the mottos that they have there, because I find that my behavior oftentimes, wanting to cling to dependency relationships, being codependent, which is a big thing in the Essanon world they talk about. And some of the programs there are, mind fart, just had it. Oh, your opinion of me is none of my business. And that's a hard one for me because, as other people have shared, the poor self-image that I have that has affected me my entire life of wanting to people please and presenting to be something I'm not. Someone talked about compartmentalizing. And, wow, talk about compartmentalizing. I was a master of that. And it's just those ideas. So my wife has made it very clear to me, without recovery, we have no relationship. And that's true. And she, because I'm apologizing to go off to meetings or do other things or time spent making a phone call or receiving a phone call and going off into the garage to go talk to another SA for a while we're in the middle of watching a TV show that she has to pause. And I'm apologizing all the time. And my wife goes, no, you do what you have to do for you. Because without recovery, we have no relationship. And it's this concept I've heard of, I need to pursue my higher power. My wife needs to pursue her higher power and her own healing and health. And as we do this together, we will become closer together. And so it's such a hard concept. And I think of periods of abstinence. And the first one, I didn't do very well at. We stayed technically sober, but my mind was all over the place. And the second one was better. And the whole idea that sex is optional, I know that now, but I still run away like a little kid screaming, ah, and just the thought of it. What? Sex? I never have sex again? No. But that just shows how sick my brain is and how addicted I am to this and the whole idea of sex. So that's just a couple of thoughts. But yeah, I've actually learned a lot from the Essanon program, because the codependency is exactly what we're talking about here. Whether we're codependent on sex, relationships, success, pride, whatever it might be, those are things we hold on to as near and dear and we'll defend to our end, or I will. I will defend to the end. And none of that's helpful. So surrendering those things to my higher power is what I have to do. But boy, is it hard. Thanks.
Thanks, Josh.
Hi, my name is Mary. I'm a sexaholic.
Hey, Mary.
And, I needed to be needed. And my root fear is a fear of abandonment. And I know that as I continue in recovery, it will improve. It probably won't be healed before I'm dead, and that's okay. But, you know, I needed to be desired. I needed to be the person that everybody needed and wanted. And so not making people angry and taking other people's consequences so that I was indispensable. And there are just so many parts of it, and it's better than it was, but it is still so there, and so there in ways that just are hidden. I had other thoughts, and I have no idea what they are. Yeah. It is a step-by-step process, and my default when I can't, so my default is to, if I can't make you feel better somehow, then I'm going to run away. And I'm going to run away and isolate, because if I'm not there, I can't piss you off. And then you'll just remember me fondly, and you'll need me again. And then I can come back and be a savior again. And looking at it now, although I know that my higher power led me to my profession, I also know that there are parts of my profession that are about me being liked, me being praised. And so my hope and my desire and really what I've been getting over the last few weeks is just coming back to, it all has to go to my higher power. Because really, when it comes down to it, it's God, and everything else is an addiction of some sort, like has been shared, whether it's, you know, lust or jealousy or pride or ego. That is all me. Whether it's focusing on somebody else or on myself, that is all an addictive thing. And I think I'm made to be dependent on a higher power. I've just twisted it. So my intention is to just surrender it back over and keep it simple. So thanks.
Thanks, Mary.
I'll just start that. James, sexaholic.
Hey, James.
Yeah, relationships are tough. In my first marriage, I got married when I was 21, had a kid on the way. And my wife and I learned to dance together in a really super codependent way. So we were really enmeshed. And I had no idea what boundaries or anything like that even looked like. But I was an active alcoholic. And I used her to help me manage my alcoholism. I don't recommend that, but the bottom line is that it kind of looked like this. It was a cat and mouse game that we used to play, and so I would hide my drinking. I was a binge drinker, and then she would inevitably find out about it, and then she would confront me and say, "Why don't you come out and drink openly?" And then I would say, "You don't understand." At least that's what I wanted to say, is that I cannot drink. You know, because as soon as I put alcohol into my body, it's like I can't stop it. And so, you know, eventually after 27 years, we got divorced, which is something that I didn't want to choose. So fast forward a little bit, I met this another lady, and we got involved. And emotionally, she just steamrolled me because I have no still really didn't have very good boundaries. And so she would come at me. She wanted to get married. She wanted to do all these things. And she would get, you know, just emotionally would get upset. And that I didn't have any resistance against that. And so I agreed to everything and just became really resentful. And although at this time I was already, you know, recovered alcoholic. So the alcoholism thing was, you know, wasn't an issue. But it's like I realized, man, I just have no ability to say no, or I feel guilty when I say no. And so we ended out amicably separating and getting divorced. And I've been single ever since, but then got sober in this program. And what a blessing that has been for me. The whole concept that you know, sex is not something that you have to have. I mean, I feel like way more comfortable as I start developing now, you know, my own boundaries and working through this issue. But I also know that there's work to be done as far as, you know, I still need to be able to interact with people and be able to be an independent person and not be dependent upon everyone else. And this is a hard part of the program. This is tough. So thank you for that.
That is all the time we have for sharing. If you did not have a chance to share, please find someone after the meeting to talk with. This is an anonymous program. Please keep all the names and shares you have heard in this meeting to yourselves. Our experience teaches us that attending meetings, working the steps, and giving and receiving sponsorship are key elements to maintaining our sobriety. Would anyone willing to sponsor or temporary sponsor please raise your hand? Please note ID badges with a blue dot indicate those willing to sponsor or temp sponsor. This is an anonymous program. Please keep the name, email address, and phone number of anyone you meet or learn about in SA to yourself. What we say here, let it stay here. Here. I've asked a volunteer, I will ask a volunteer to read a closing reading for us. Would somebody volunteer to read? Here.
James Sexaholic. The 12 promises. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past, nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises?
We think not.
They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them.
All right. After a moment of silence for the sexaholic who still suffers, please join me in the third step prayer.
God, renew myself to thee, to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help, of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. Keep coming back. It works if you work it, and your work it, so work it.
Dang it.